Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil. So on today's episode, we're going to discuss whether or not bolt action is getting stale. And where this has come from is that recently the HMG guys down in Western Australia released an episode discussing the same topic. It's something that Johnny and I have spoken about over the last few months, and we watched Dan and his views on the episode. We'll stick a link in our description as well if you haven't already seen it. So we thought today we'd discuss to what extent bolt action might be getting stale, could be potentially quite a depressing episode, and then next week we'll be discussing ways in which it may not be getting stale and things you might want to do if you are finding it needs a little bit of a freshen up.
Nice. So 4 days before Christmas will make you a little bit depressed, but don't panic, because once you've got your Christmas presents, while you're building and painting them, we'll cheer you back up.
Happy holidays.
Well, I guess the place to start would be to address some of the reasons it might be getting stale. So Bolt Action was released originally in 2012. We got a new edition in 2016. It's nearly been 8 years next year.
Mm-hmm.
So twice as long as the gap between first and second.
Yeah.
And we still haven't seen the third edition. Now, I suppose the first question, before we even discuss whether it's getting stale, the first question that springs to mind for me is, do we need a third edition? Or are we just hankering for it because we're a bit bored?
So did you play first edition?
I didn't. I joined just after second edition landed, I think.
So I started, obviously, well and truly in second edition, but I have played first edition, bizarrely. And I'm just interested in terms of what the main differences were from first to second. I think I'm right in saying it was area templates came in. So in terms of HE.
Yep, templates came in, correct.
Close assaults were different.
No, basically the same. Very little difference.
Tough Fighter was different, wasn't it?
Tough Fighter was different. It used to be an extra attack.
Yeah.
And then, so there was two, there was basically a combo effect. I can't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's a good job we're not releasing this in 2013, otherwise we'd be pulled over the coals for our lack of rules knowledge. But I know there was two different effects. I think Tough Fighter gave you one extra attack, mm-hmm. and then I think Assault gave you what Tough Fighter currently gives you. And so you could combo an extra attack with an additional roll, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be listeners out there who have been playing from first edition, but I'm pretty sure in saying those were probably the major two things that happened.
The other big differences were, and sort of the thing that sort of led the meta. So when I joined, the big thing everyone was raving about was Pumas. Everyone was like, oh,
yeah.
He's got a Puma, as though he's a big cheesy wargamer.
Yeah. Well, that's because there were more Pumas being played in bolt action than were built, probably. But there we go.
Well, kind of. But, I mean, that's probably true of most
yeah,
tanks.
Yeah, yeah.
But the big difference is recce was different. So recce, you used to be able to recce even if you'd already activated, which is why Pumas were sort of overpowered, if you will, because you'd rock around the corner, shoot, and then I think you'd still be able to recce back.
Mm-hmm.
So templates, I think, probably a bit of a Marmite change. Mm-hmm. I personally don't like it because it adds a lot of faff, sort of arranging models and measuring your one-inch gaps and all the rest of it if you're trying to play competitively.
Mm.
And then I also don't like that sometimes it's not templates.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got sort of the worst of both worlds. So I'm not a big fan of that change. The one change that did come in that I think everyone probably would agree was good is I think Snap 2 was introduced in version 2.
Right, okay, yep.
Which is a quality change. I think that's the kind of stuff that I'd like to see in V3 where, yes, there are some issues to address, but I like these little quirky add-ons where if you look at Snap 2, it hasn't really changed the meta or changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't suddenly made officers super powerful, but it's given them something to do.
Mm.
And I think there's probably room for that. I think officers still need something extra to do.
Yeah, because at the moment, yeah, certainly when you're talking about you know, competitive playing games and events, we talk about the officer tax. And you know, a very common build is to get the cheapest officer on his own in order to access what you can access either by having that second platoon or just by saving points if it's a single platoon, because you're only spending 35 points on an experienced officer if it's available to you.
Yeah, and so there's things we could do with that without going into a whole separate episode, but things like giving him a radio man that lets him do this special ability, or just letting him lead a squad so that he's actually doing something useful in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of things that I'd like to see. And for me, they're the sort of areas of the game where I would say they're getting a bit stale, where you have units that basically just aren't worth playing, or you have to play them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like a recurring theme that they don't get up to much, like machine guns.
Yeah, yeah, true, yeah. So yeah, it's interesting, there was 4 years between the first and second edition, and we're now, as like you said, entering the eighth year next year between the second edition and the next one. And it may well be that one reason why some people might say bolt action is getting stale is that we haven't had a, not even a major change, but, you know, haven't had, you know, some significant changes to the way the game is played and the way the rules work. They do come in through the FAQ and errata system. You know, flamethrowers being one of your favourite topics with regards to the big change that happened, you know, when...
Don't get me started. Sorry. I'm not biting.
And you do see some changes, you know, creep in through the FAQ or errata. But there haven't, to my knowledge, been major substantial changes to the rules in the last 7 years.
No. And the big problem with, if you're using the errata and FAQ to modify the game system at its core, is you're not spending a lot of time playtesting that because you're not giving it the same sort of weight and attention that you would give to something that you're publishing in a book to sell for profit. The FAQ is seen very much as a fix-it document. And so when you've got people just changing rules willy-nilly in there, that's a bit frustrating. But as you say, it hasn't been used to change the game hugely, apart from one or two things have been sort of quirked.
I was going to say with the FAQ, though, to my knowledge, and others may know better than me, all of the entries in the FAQ or errata do go through Alessio.
Yeah, I'm not sure if all do, but I remember when we when we were at the open day, I think there was a comment like that.
Yeah.
Something along the lines of, when the FAQs come in, if it is unclear, they'll go to Alessio and say, can you decide one way or another? So I suppose we have got the actual games designer involved in some capacity, even if it's not actually in sort of rejuvenating the system through new rules.
And I think that's why you see, you know, certainly in the Facebook group where people go, I've got an email from Warlord. And then the response is, but until that gets published, that is just an email from Warlord, as opposed to it is a public document and it's been published and, you know, and approved as this is a change or this is a clarification.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, on the note of FAQs and erratas, we haven't had one. So we were getting them sort of annually, let's say, sometimes more often, but about that. They did at one point release a video saying they're going to do quarterly FAQs. Never came to anything.
It's actually written in the document itself.
Oh, is it?
They are. Yeah, they are quarterly. I think it's snuck in March 22.
So they did that. I think they then waited 6 months and released another one in September.
Yeah, that's near enough quarterly, isn't it?
Yeah. But anyway, the point we're making is there hasn't been an FAQ in well over a year now. So we said quarterly.
Yeah.
It's been five quarters without an FAQ. It's like the game isn't perfect. I don't think they've stopped doing it because they think the game's perfect. Whether they've run out of stuff to add, maybe. It is getting a bit of a tome.
Yeah.
But it's just a shame that they don't feel like they have to update it.
I was going to open up the whole Pandora's box of, if they're working on another version, then they haven't put out the, you know, an FAQ in the last year because they're rules writers / playtesters are focusing on an alternative set of things to focus on.
Yeah. Well, the problem from my perspective, so we've talked quite a lot about sort of the rules and how long in the tooth they're getting. The problem is less for me that it becomes unplayable because the errors aren't being fixed. It just gets a bit bland because, like I was saying when they introduced the new thing for the officers, we're not getting these new little quirks that just sort of change the way the game plays ever so slightly and just gives you something extra to try out next time you play the game.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And yeah, going right back to it, when I was asking, you know, when did first edition come out? When did second edition come out? You know, 4 years feels like a decent amount of time to release something, have a lot of, you know, people playing it, identify maybe some of the things that really do need a bit of a change or a freshen up. Now that we're getting into, well, 7 years in, getting into 8 years, it certainly feels like maybe in the last 18, 24 months, a revamped version. We're not talking about, you know, changing the whole game system in the way that other major companies have changed, you know, their game system in the past, but a revamped version may well freshen things up and shift the play style and shift the meta, for want of a better phrase, in a different way.
Yeah, and also, whenever you get a new edition of a game, you get a whole raft of sort of fresh blood into the community, because you get people who are sort of on the periphery. Either they've fallen out of the game because they got a bit bored of it, or they've always sort of been interested but never sort of took the plunge. And then when all the publicity of a new version comes about, that's often the incentive people need to jump back in. And generally, new people bring new ideas. You end up with new people to play, and it keeps the community sort of healthy, stops it going stale. Because like we talked about with clubs in the last episode, I think it was, if you're always playing in the same club, you end up all playing in a very similar way because you are so used to countering each other's specific builds. So if that becomes almost like a very local meta. And then obviously as tournaments happen, that meta spreads. And you do see, I mean, I've said this every time we go to a tournament, I'm pretty bored of playing Brits. And by that, I mean playing against Brits.
Yeah.
Because they are guaranteed to be there, partly because we're in Britain. People have connections to the British Army. They want to replicate specific engagements. But also, it's just sort of a go-to build for a lot of players because the system hasn't changed for that long, that a specific build has become quite dominant because it's quite sort of, not to offend anyone, but it's quite easy to play. Controversial opinion there, I bet.
I don't think many people would challenge that in terms of easy is probably not the word to use. I think it's quite forgiving.
That's what I mean, basically. I'm happy to switch the word easy for forgiven, but generally I'd see them quite sort of, they're almost synonyms when you're playing, when you talk about playing games and sort of strategies, because the thing that you go wrong on is making a mistake. And so forgiving means, if you make a mistake, you're not punished as hard, and so it's easier to play the game. And yeah, so I would just like a new version to zhuzh it up a bit and sort of give some other nations a day in the sun, really.
Yeah, yeah. Moving away from the tournament side of things and just thinking about the other releases, so not, you know, not a new release in terms of version 3. The campaign books have been pretty steady, going right back. It was, you know, two in 2014, two in 2015, one in 2016. I think I'm right in saying there were five on the old edition, and then from there, so 2017 onwards, it moved into the new versions. Yeah, five in 2017, three, two, none in 2022, and then two in 23. So you're looking at least two a year, bar in 2016. But 2016 was when they released the second edition, so they were busy doing other things. So it's not as though Warlord have just released the game in 2016 and gone, right, there you go, crack on, and not released new content regularly over the last 7 years to bring in new ways of, you know, new units, new theatres to explore, new armies. You know, the Slovakians appeared in Case Blue, for example. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to keep it fresh through the campaign books and through the often as well through the miniatures that are being released in line with the campaign books.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying there with 2017 being a big year, that clearly they've released a new version, and then to sort of build on the excitement of the new version and the new system that they've built, they've then released a raft of campaign books to allow people to play in all these different areas of the war. And that would be great to see if/when they release V3. It'd be great to see a raft of campaign books, because ultimately I don't think they'll invalidate per se the existing campaign books, but hopefully the rules will change sort of sufficiently that it will be a bit janky to use the old ones. And so they'll have to sort of errata them or do something to sort of help streamline them into the new one. I imagine a new version would mean new campaign books, because they are a great way to keep the game fresh. Because you can create all sorts of different ways to play. And if you're not primarily a competitive gamer, the campaign books are perfect for that, because even if all you did is once a year, bought a campaign book and built an army from it, that's a nice annual project for you.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to mention that at some point, that it'd be interesting to know the ratio between tournament players to casual players to narrative players, because I think you can distinguish between those three in the sense that, you know, your narrative player is that person who's going to buy a campaign book with their club or with their mate and go, right, we're going to build an army for this campaign book, and we're going to play our way through the 15, 16 scenarios that go in that campaign book. Then there's that casual player who just wants to play a World War II 28mm skirmish game, who will pick up, you know, your starter box or pick up your bits and pieces, build an army. They're not interested in going to events or going to major events and major tournaments. There's enough in the game, because it's not something they're playing week in, week out. It's maybe one of, you know, three or four or five games they play and they enjoy. And then there's your hardcore, you know, tournament players who are going every fortnight, you know, once a month, where it might for them be getting a little bit stale for what you said earlier, because you go to events and you see the same or very similar builds because people have worked out what works and which nations are more powerful and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I think nobody fits into one exclusively.
No.
So if we take the casual sort of and imagine that as the centre ground, they'll often sort of replicate a battle from a specific campaign book or go to a tournament and try and compete. And so I imagine everyone's sort of a shade of grey on that spectrum. The narrative one, I think, is one of those things that seems like I'd be super enthusiastic. Let's do it. Let's do a whole campaign from the book, mission by mission, blow by blow. But I imagine as you get further and further into it, it starts to become a bit samey.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never been one that I've really done.
Mm.
I've always sort of been on your casual end, so playing down clubs or tournament end. And I don't really find, other than the fact that everyone's bringing Brits and it's just a bit dull, I actually don't find tournament play to be getting that stale, really, because as long as there's new players, and this is the problem for me with not releasing new versions, it's not so much that the rules aren't changing,
mm-hmm.
it's that the longer it goes on, people sort of drift away.
Mm-hmm.
So every now and then you just need a new release to bring players back in.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new players bring a new dynamic,
bring
new ideas to the game. I actually find the thing that I find really stale with the tournaments isn't the rules or anything else, or the players even. It's that formulaic pack of it's 1,000 points,
mm-hmm.
it's one or two platoons, it's two flamethrowers, it's one multi-launcher. Because basically, that's what drives players to bring the same list every time because, okay, so I want to win, so I'm going to bring two flamethrowers, one multi-launcher. I'm going to bring Paragurkas because they're a bargain. And for me, that's the thing that's gotten stale for me at the tournaments. It's not the actual rules or anything. It's those packs that just encourage people to bring Paragurkas because we've comped everything else down.
Mm.
And all that happens whenever you do that is you just shift the meta to something else. Like at the English Nationals, we saw at 750, no armor. Okay, so I'll just take the Germans and take lots of free LMGs with the Schützen squads.
Yeah.
And that's a similar thing. It just, you add these restrictions, it shifts the meta. I actually, from my perspective, the thing that I find the most fresh is if you just have no restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when you get new players with new ideas coming up with weird, quirky stuff. Because everything in bolt action is like rock, paper, scissors, isn't it? Like, I've got this big rock. It's very, oh, someone's brought a paper.
Yeah, thinking about the, you know, some of the major tournaments in the UK there, I think we are starting to see, and have seen, people moving away from that, you know, single, double, generic platoon, two flamethrowers, etc. WoW, for example, okay, that was an international event, but you know, WoW shifted it to 1,100 points single platoon, which I really enjoyed when we did the WoW debrief. I made a point of talking about that because it meant that you couldn't just take your 1,000 point single platoon units off the shelf and go, oh, here's my army. You didn't just add in 100 points of extra stuff. You had to think about it in a different way. The Megatron 3000 up in Scotland, the Welsh Open, where it's theatre lists only. So you can't bring a, you know, a full on, you know, generic spam 1,000 point list, because what fits in a 1,000 point generic list is not always, in fact, probably never actually can be replicated in a theatre selector, give or take, depending on the nation that you're taking.
Yeah, the Welsh Open is a great example of like lots of novel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
However, because we've got a very specific list of theatre selectors, I think there is a risk of that one getting a bit stale. And so I would encourage sort of adding new theatres regularly just to keep it fresh.
Yeah, what Alistair's running up in Scotland is fantastic with the Megatron 3000, where one person can only take that theatre selector. So you and I both can't turn up with the same selector. What I also liked is how the following year, he's then said, you can't bring the same selector again. So you've got to change.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, you've got to change your selector. You might even have to change whether or not it's Axis and Allied. I can't remember if I've read that and heard that in one of his interviews. But I really like that approach because that is forcing people to freshen things up.
It's also a great way to sell tickets because I believe it's first come, first serve on the selectors. And so it's a great way to sort of work out, to gauge the interest nice and early, because people are going to jump in quickly if they've got something very specific that they want to play. The one thing I would say, so the 1100 I liked. I liked the idea of like mixing it up, and it's something that sort of we've done sort of separately and for our tournaments equally, throwing in a weird points limit just to make it a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
The problem I found recently is because everyone's doing this, there actually isn't a competitive 1,000 point tournament in the UK anymore.
For next year. So you've got the Welsh Nationals, which is 1250. You've got the English Nationals, which is 750, 1250. And then you've got the Warlord GT, which is 1100. And then you've got the Scottish Nationals, which is also 1100.
Yeah. And so the whole point of doing the 1100 was because it's novel.
Yeah.
And then everyone's jumped on the bandwagon. So now 1100 is the new 1000.
Mm-hmm.
It's not World Open War's fault that it's happened, but I don't see why the other ones had to shift.
Mm-hmm.
Either come up with something brand new, or if everyone else has changed, you stay the same because that then you're different mm-hmm. by not changing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, from my perspective, my favourite way to play the game is 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 points, no restrictions, because it's a small enough points limit. You're really having to make hard choices on what you're including.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun. You put 1,250 in. I actually struggle to fill 1,250 with stuff that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Once I get to about 1,100, I'm just throwing in stuff that, yeah, this will be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up having to turn to the boring stuff. Well, the stuff that I found boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Stuart, because in my US platoon, once I've gotten to 1,000, I've basically got everything I want. So what do I spend the other 250 points on? Well, if I'm looking for something that's actually worth the points, the only thing left to squeeze in is a Stuart or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame. I prefer, and that's why I like 1,000, because it's small enough that actually, for me personally, I find that the Stuart isn't necessarily worth it 1,000, but over 1,000 definitely worth it every time.
So here's an idea, possibly controversial. Are the players making the game stale? Because the players are taking a very narrow or limited selection of units and armies to some of these major events because they know that those things work. They don't want to necessarily go out on a limb and try something completely off the wall and different, because if it doesn't work and they've rocked up to a major event and they want to do well, they've then got the consequence of going a little bit left field but not actually being able to pull it off.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the packs often push people down that avenue. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of packs that encourage British players, especially if they're being very loose with their definition of generic and they're playing generic. So they're allowing things like land mattresses, which is the multiple rocket launcher is basically the only thing the Brits don't have. And so if you allow them in, then there's zero reason to not play Brits.
Unless you don't own a British army. But yeah.
But if you're that serious about winning, I'm sure you'll go out and find one. And this is where actually the new version, because the reason everyone's taking Gurkhas is because they're under-costed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being addressed. It could be addressed in an FAQ. It ideally will be addressed in a new version.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we're not getting either at the minute to address that problem. So partly it's the rules. Partly there's certain packs that play into Brits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if you allow tank platoons and infantry platoons, the British tank platoon lists are really strong because you can have the Stuarts, you can have the Gurkhas. If you've only got a few infantry squads, having stubborn, cannot charge them infantry squads is amazing. And so, like, there are ways to build packs that discourage the standard builds,
mm-hmm.
but we don't see that often. So, yes, the players, but equally, I can't blame individuals because...
No, I'm not pointing at any individuals. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, we don't see a 24-person event with 24 British lists or with Gurkhas and Stuarts.
No.
You do see alternative nations. So if it was only one particular nation and one particular build and everyone was netlisting, you'd rock up and you'd just have a big Gurkha-Stuart face-off, which we don't see. You do see your Soviets, you see your Japanese, you see your Germans. I think we're going to see Italians appearing more and more. You may see your French, you may see your Polish.
Yeah, at the competitive ones, what I find tends to happen is you get the people who are playing for thematic reasons, like they've built a thematic army that they just really like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the top quarter will be those sort of net lists, for want of a better word. So your Brits are guaranteed to be, at the UK tournament anyway, of your top 10 players, the Brits are usually at least half of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a few Soviets scattered in, an occasional US player, Japanese, but I think the Japanese are really strong but underrepresented, and so actually they're probably the perfect case to argue that people aren't just playing competitively, because actually the Japanese are a good counter to that British build. And so if you know that that's coming up all the time at the top tables, the Japanese would actually be quite a nice way to counter that, but we don't see it that much, which makes me think that actually people in bolt action, even as they get competitive, do still play for thematic reasons as well.
Mm-hmm. Moving away from the whole tournament talk side of things, I think what has been noticeable over the last 18 months, 12 months, is people jumping into bolt action from alternative game systems, because maybe their primary system they were playing has, for them, got a bit boring, a bit stale, or a bit overly complicated, and they like the, you know, the dice mechanic, dice out of the bag mechanic, for example. They like the more of the increased availability of models and ranges and units, which is obviously happening year on year, not just because of Warlord, but because of other manufacturers releasing a good range of plastic miniatures, for example, or metal miniatures, as well as 3D printing, all that sort of thing. So I think we are seeing a lot more people joining the game, certainly over the last 18 months, two years that I've been playing. I've noticed there has been an increase in people jumping in locally and nationally. Talking to them, a lot of the time it is because they've moved away from another game system and another publisher or manufacturer.
Yeah, it's difficult to judge, I find, because generally people vocally join and quietly slip out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with like why businesses fail, because like people who are happy or just mildly unhappy don't tend to make a lot of noise. And so when you're losing customers slowly, you don't really notice it because people aren't kicking off just because they've lost interest in your business. And so that's a lot of businesses close that way because, well, everyone seems to be quite happy. Well, yeah, because people aren't going to shout at you about how they're just not that bothered anymore. If they're shouting at you, it means they are bothered. And I do think that there is a bit of that. And I do think it's difficult to gauge because of that, because people who are getting into it will be sort of sharing pictures, jumping on the forums, asking questions. People who are just a bit bored, and actually the ones who aren't intending to stop playing, but just realize sort of 9 months down the line, oh, I actually haven't played Bolt Action in a long time. And then it gets to 18 months down the line and think, actually, why am I keeping this army on a shelf when I could sell it, get a few pound and fund another hobby? Those are the players that I worry about, where if the game does get a bit stagnant because it's not being supported by the company, they're the players that I think sort of slip away because they don't have the incentive to sort of just something to get them down the club and try it out again. It's really hard to judge, I think. Yeah.
The last thing I was going to throw in was the release of new miniatures, because that, you know, in any game system will invigorate or reinvigorate, depending on where we're at, the players and the armies that you see. And obviously the two big ones over the last, you know, 18 months has been the Italians and the French, in terms of having plastic kits available for them.
Yeah, and actually the miniatures, I think the amount of 40K players who you hear the story of, oh, I thought the models were quite cool, and so I bought some. And then I just fancied painting as sort of a little side hobby.
Yeah.
And then before I knew it, I had sort of firing the points, and I thought, actually, there's a game behind this. Maybe I should go and try the game. And then before you know it, you've got 5,000 points because you keep trying out new armies. And so I do think it's probably not as exciting as a new edition and bringing players. Because the big thing with the new edition is you bring the old players who haven't played in a while back in.
Yeah.
As well as the new players, you sort of steal them over from other systems, as well as people just who've just seen this release but never played any of the war games before. But the minis can be a similar sort of effect where, oh, that's cool, I'll try that. I'm not sure, because World War II infantry is quite drab, generally. I think that's probably a fair assessment, and intentionally so.
Yeah.
Except the Italians, maybe, with the feathers. But because of that, I'm not sure how much of an effect we get in Bolt Action compared to, say, 40K, where when they release like a new dreadnought or something cool, like a big sort of display piece that they put in the window, I don't know how much of that effect we get in Bolt Action, because it's not like we're inventing new tanks.
Yeah.
I suppose sort of the prototype tanks and stuff and sort of nice kits like that. And so people who are just sort of like general modelers might be buying the nice kits, but yeah, I would be curious to see how much of an effect that was, but I don't know how you'd measure it.
I guess, and it's a completely unscientific way of doing it, is to have a look over the next 12 months, how many French armies we're starting to see, how many Italian armies we're starting to see. Those being the two obvious ones, not just in terms of the miniature releases, but with the Italians now getting good through Case Blue and the units and the alternative national rules that are available. That will be a very unscientific way of measuring whether or not having new miniatures is making people, you know, try out new armies and build a, you know, another army for them to use.
There probably is another way you could do it with surveys. So War Games Illustrated, I think, do an annual survey, don't they?
They do, yeah.
And that kind of thing you could do. If you're a business like Warlord Games, you could send out a survey to the players of a game. And one of your questions could be, what was the first thing you did? Did you do a demo game? Did you build a kit? Did you... You know, you could have many options, and that would tell you sort of as a percentage how people are coming into your business, and that would be interesting. Because I do think sort of roots in, I imagine it goes sort of friends, then new editions and sort of publications, and then the minis for me would probably be the third driver on sort of bringing people into the game.
Yeah, I mean, I was the other way around completely. Mine was the minis. Didn't have any friends and
still don't.
Still don't. And never played the game. Not really one I can comment on there.
Yeah, from my perspective, it was come from another game, and then someone starts this game. I try out this game. It's good. And I sort of drift into this game from the other game.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, interestingly, so the other game was 40K. And one of the reasons I drifted out of 40K was because it started to get too complex.
Mm.
And so the irony is, when I'm saying add these little quirky things, there is sort of probably a bit of restraint, because I think the type of people who play bold action don't want to be learning lots and lots of rules and sort of having in-game effects that... So random in-game effects, like I don't know what my army's abilities are until I roll a dice and stuff like that, because it's just too much to remember. And I think a lot of the players are playing very casual, and even the tournament players, I think, like the simplicity of it, because then it allows you to play with strategies rather than your sort of bigger strategies, more than just I'm going to build an army that abuses this one element of the game.
Yeah, sure.
So I guess the big question is, and I imagine we can't say objectively, so I suppose I'll guess, I'll ask your opinion. Is the game stale?
I don't think, for me, it's not. No, it's not stale. I think it has the potential to become stale, and that would be out of the choices that I make.
Yeah.
So, for example, if I only choose to play bolt action, you know, 9 times out of 10, if I choose to play one or two armies all the time, and if I ignore the options that are available to me through the campaign books and so on, then absolutely it can become stale. But I think that would be true of any game if I zoned in on it, did it so much, and narrowed down my choices through what I choose to do.
Yeah. I don't find the game especially stale. I think the problem at the moment is it's the players who are the ones who are keeping it fresh. And I think it would be great to have more support for the system, just to keep it a little bit more interesting, either fixing bugs as they are found or introducing new elements just to add a bit of fun. The game itself, I enjoy playing it. I think I could play it indefinitely. I probably wouldn't get too bored of it. But jumping back, I do think it's the players, because it's the players who are releasing expansions, doing tournaments that are different to what we see. In fact, the entire tournament scene is basically player-led. We've got players also arranged international, so you've got World Open War we've already discussed, you've got the World Team Championship. You've got people making content about the game. So you've got like the Snafu guys, HMG podcast we've already name-dropped. And that sort of stuff is keeping it fresh. But the question is, how long can we as a community keep it fresh before we need something fresh from intervention
from the top? Yeah,
exactly. Because there's only so many ways you can play. There's only so many strategies. We're not going to come up with anything groundbreaking 8 years into the game that hasn't already been discovered. And so we're very much, whenever you watch sort of Bo Mortensen strategy videos, people are in a mindset now, and the strategy hints and tips are very nuanced. There's less of what we saw at the beginning of V2, where it was, this is how you counter this army. Everyone knows that now. And we're now talking about, oh, have you thought about, I don't know, I can't think of an example. I've just realized I argued myself into a corner. So yeah, in my opinion, it's the community that are keeping it fresh. And I'm looking forward to a big release from the company just to keep the community interested and also bring some fresh blood in, basically.
Yeah, we'll talk about this in the next episode in terms of the alternative eras that are represented, you know, through the community with regards to the utilization of bolt action rules. Things like alternative missions, you know, you've got the Bolt Action Alliance mission pack. There's lots of, like you said, there's lots of stuff going on which is from the community, which is being embraced by different communities around the globe and fully supported by Warlord, but not necessarily being led by Warlord.
Yeah, and the big one for me, and you're just going to complain I'm being a broken record here, but Conflict is so close to bolt action that I wish it would just get some love soon, because I think having an adjacent system can keep both fresh, because you're sort of, you're bouncing between the two, you're bringing ideas from one to the other. Again, I think Conflict is like that 40K thing I was talking about, where the minis are cool. There's some really cool ideas in there, like the zombies I think are cool, the werewolves are cool, the Tesla tanks, it's been done a lot, but it's still a cool idea. And that's the kind of stuff where I think we can draw players in with cool minis and sort of sci-fi minis. And then once they're playing Conflict, if it's close enough in alignment to bolt action, you're then bringing people in. The two communities are sharing ideas. That would do wonders for both games, I think, if they were nice and closely aligned.
So for those of you that haven't already seen it, the Painting Face recently did an interview with John Stallard where he talks about the future of Warlord Games and what they got planned for the next year or so. Didn't really give many spoilers away, but he did talk about Conflict 47 and how they are underneath the Warlord Games umbrella, how they're going to be revisiting Conflict 47, updating the rules. To what extent it's completely in line with Bolt Action, it is up for debate. And when we were at the Open Day in September, Paul was saying that it's not going to be completely aligned with Bolt Action, but there will be an element of similarity between the two. So if that is the case, like you said, you may well get people jumping into Conflict 47 because they like the minis, they like the science fiction, science fantasy side of it. And then the next step is to go from your 40k to Conflict 47 to your World War II historical Bolt Action.
Gateway drugs.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. As you've just described, Conflict is the perfect gateway
game
to Bolt Action from 40k or similar sort of games because it is close enough in genre. People are coming in. And then also, once you're in Conflict, it's close enough in genre to Bolt Action. So it's a bit of a shame if they're never planning to align them again.
Hmm. You need to go and listen to the interview. It was a really good episode on the Painting Face.
Well, even though I don't think it's stale, I am looking forward to discussing ways to keep it fresh, especially the community-made expansions, if you will, for the system that dip into different periods and different fictions related to World War II. So yeah, I'm looking forward to reading about them. I have looked at them briefly, but not in sufficient depth, really, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that I think I might try and squeeze into my gaming in the new year.
Well, let us know what you think. Has Bolt Action got stale? Has it the potential to get stale? And what are you maybe looking forward to in 2024 if it is getting to that point where it could be creeping in?
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.